Good afternoon. Syphilis is a genital ulcer disease caused by the spirochete Treponema pallidum. Primary and secondary syphilis cases in the United States have been increasing, especially among men who have sex with men, or MSM, as is demonstrated in this graph and was discussed in the previous presentation. Ocular syphilis is an inflammatory eye disease that can cause a variety of ocular signs and symptoms and can involve almost any eye structure. This is a picture of extensive scarring from acute syphilitic multifocal chorioretinitis. The recommended treatment for ocular syphilis is IV penicillin G for 10 to 14 days. Although syphilis is nationally notifiable, ocular manifestations of syphilis are not routinely reported to CDC. Clusters of ocular syphilis were reported from Seattle and San Francisco in early 2015, and CDC was notified. CDC issued a clinical advisory in April of 2015, and an MMWR Notes from the Field was published in October describing the two clusters. Within this context, the North Carolina Division of Public Health, or NCDPH, performed a preliminary review of their cases of ocular syphilis and found a potential increase out of proportion to the rise in all syphilis. NCDPH also received several reports of severe outcomes due to ocular syphilis, including blindness. Because of this, NCDPH invited CDC's Division of STD Prevention to assist with an investigation into ocular syphilis. A data review of the North Carolina Electronic Data Surveillance System, or NCEDS, was performed from 2014 to 2015. Initially, cases were identified from those with eye or conjunctiva listed as a site of infection. This is illustrated here with the checkbox highlighted in red. Then a free text search was completed for various eye or vision-related terms to identify additional cases. Once all cases had been identified, a medical chart for each case was requested and reviewed. NCEDS was also used to compare characteristics for ocular and non-ocular syphilis cases. In addition, select North Carolina Disease Investigation Specialists, or DIS, contacted cases for a follow-up interview. Questions were asked regarding care for ocular syphilis and visual function. Preliminary case definitions for ocular syphilis used in the investigation are presented here. A suspected case is a person with symptoms of ocular disease with no other defined etiology who is diagnosed with syphilis. A probable case also has an exam by an ophthalmologist with findings consistent with ocular syphilis, and a confirmed case has treponemes found in aqueous or vitreous fluid. Statistical methods are shown here. We calculated prevalence ratios to compare ocular and non-ocular syphilis in North Carolina and used chi-square analyses to assess for factors associated with various outcomes. A p-value less than 0.05 was considered significant. In some circumstances, however, especially with case interviews, the numbers were small, so some information will be presented that approached statistical significance. Now to the results. This is the EPI curve for cases identified during the investigation. A total of 63 cases were identified, 20 in 2014 and 43 in 2015, a 115% increase. This is within a context of a 35% increase in all syphilis from 2014 to 2015. Ocular syphilis cases represent 1.5% of all reported syphilis cases in North Carolina over the last 2 years. Ocular syphilis cases were described throughout the state. Additionally, no patients with ocular syphilis named another ocular syphilis patient in a contact investigation. Demographic characteristics for the cases are presented here. Almost all cases were male, and a majority were over the age of 40 and known to be MSM. Syphilis stage, evaluation, and treatment are presented here. Almost half of all cases were in late latent syphilis or latent of unknown duration. 38 patients had an analysis of cerebrospinal fluid, or CSF, performed. Of those, 24 had a positive CSF VDRL. 41 patients received 10 to 14 days of IV penicillin G. An additional 13 patients received IM benzathine penicillin only. Reported eye symptoms are presented here. A patient could report more than one symptom. Blurry vision was most commonly reported. 13 patients reported some vision loss, and 6 reported loss of functional vision. Eye exam findings are presented here. Some form of uveitis was the most common diagnosis, and 12 patients had a severe eye diagnosis, including chorioretinitis, optic neuritis, or retinal detachment. This table shows characteristics for ocular syphilis cases compared to cases without ocular manifestations. Ocular syphilis cases were more likely than those without ocular manifestations to be male, white, over the age of 40, and HIV infected. In addition, the median RPR was higher in ocular syphilis compared to syphilis cases without ocular manifestations. 39 patients were able to be reached for a follow-up interview. No significant differences were noted between those who had a follow-up interview and those who refused or were unable to be reached. All further analyses presented here are limited to the 39 patients with a follow-up interview. 27 patients received at least 10 days of IV penicillin. Age and insurance type were not associated with treatment. HIV-positive patients were more likely to receive treatment than patients with HIV-negative or unknown status. Those who went to an STD clinic received IV penicillin less often, potentially due either to less severe disease or provider concern for lack of follow-up. Patients who went to an eye doctor were more likely to receive IV penicillin, again, potentially related to severity of symptoms. Within the interview, patients were asked about the duration of time between the onset of symptoms and when they first sought care, as well as the timing between care and the initiation of treatment. The median number of days by location is presented here. The timing from symptom onset to care is highlighted here. Not surprisingly, people who went to the emergency department with more acute symptoms. The timing from first seeking care to the initiation of treatment is highlighted here. Patients who first sought care at an eye doctor had the longest interval before treatment. A question regarding overall visual function was assessed at 3 time points. First, a patient was asked about their vision before symptoms began to assess for baseline visual function. Next, the question was asked when their syphilis-related vision symptoms were at their worst. And finally, a patient was asked about their current visual function. Patients rated their visual function, and their responses are presented here at the 3 time points, comparing a response of excellent or good to a response of fair, poor, very poor, or blind. Almost all patients reported excellent or good vision before their ocular syphilis diagnosis. However, when asked about symptoms during their ocular syphilis diagnosis, 87% of patients reported visual impairment. Currently, 80% reported excellent or good overall visual function around the time of the interview after care and treatment. Not everyone's vision returned to baseline, however. Patients with visual function that was worse than their baseline were deemed to have residual symptoms. 12 patients reported current visual function as worse than before their diagnosis. 5 of 9 patients who reported vision loss initially had residual symptoms, and both patients who did not receive treatment had residual symptoms as well. In conclusion, ocular syphilis increased from 2014 to 2015 in North Carolina at a higher rate than overall syphilis. The true cause of this increase is difficult to assess and could possibly be related to increasing awareness with both North Carolina and CDC's clinical advisories. Ocular syphilis was diagnosed in patients in all stages of syphilis and in patients who were both HIV positive and HIV negative. Ocular syphilis can result in severe visual impairment. However, most patients improved after treatment. It is important to consider ocular syphilis in anyone with visual symptoms and possible syphilis. Many questions still remain. Is the increase of ocular syphilis a real outbreak or due to increased awareness? How many cases are undiagnosed? And are there additional risk factors influencing the development of ocular syphilis? Why does one patient with syphilis have ocular manifestations and another one will not? further work is needed to answer these questions. This has been the work of many amazing people. I would like to thank the North Carolina Division of Public Health, North Carolina DIS, and those at CDC who contributed to this work. Thanks.
Okay, papers open for questions.
Ned Hook from UAB. Congratulations. You really gathered a wealth of information, and it's really important. So first and foremost, congratulations.
Thank you.
It was interesting that a not inconsequential number of your patients appeared to be treated with something other than 10 days of penicillin. And I presume that at least some of those were benzathine penicillin. And I'd love to hear what the outcomes of treatment was for those patients.
Yeah, so we tried to look at it stratifying by treatment. The problem is there's so many confounding things. So a person who presented to an STD clinic and only reported blurry vision was more likely to get benzathine penicillin, whereas a person who had complete vision loss or a diagnosis of optic neuritis or chorioretinitis was more likely to receive IV penicillin. If you look at it, the patients who received benzathine actually did better. But again, I think that's because they were the ones who were the most likely to have less severe symptoms. We tried to kind of build a model and adjust for all of that. The problem is our numbers are so small that our confidence intervals were too wide to actually interpret. So hopefully we'll continue to, get more information and be able to look at that.
Dr. Maronia Hansen there, Guy's and St. Thomas's in London. Half these individuals had a lumbar puncture. What value did that add, and were there any differences seen in these patients who had those?
Yeah, so we looked at who was more likely to receive it. Obviously, patients who had severe symptoms and patients who had HIV were more likely to have received a lumbar puncture. I don't know that we specifically did an analysis to say, did information obtained from the lumbar puncture change treatment in anybody? The recommendation is that everybody with ocular syphilis be treated as if they had neurosyphilis. So I don't know that we specifically, looked at that. The recommendation is moving forward that you could repeat and make sure that the indices had improved. We have all of that information if they, what all their CSF indices are, and so we can certainly kind of stratify by abnormal CSF indices. We didn't have time in this presentation.
Hi, Ryan Murphy, Los Angeles County. And I was just curious, with your follow-up of the cases, what contact did you guys have with any of the clinicians? And if you had some, did you ask them if they had seen the alerts as just a way to kind of get an idea how much the bias might have, or if there was a bias, but how much of the increased reporting could be due to the increased awareness?
Yeah, so the follow-up interviews were exclusively DIS directly to the patient. So that didn't involve the provider at all. The outreach for the medical records, though, every patient had their medical records requested, so that obviously went through the provider. I think for the most part, and North Carolina can, if anybody has anything specific to say, but there had been some really good outreach with North Carolina, and so I felt like especially by the time we got there, a lot of providers, as well as the wealth of STD knowledge in the state of North Carolina, had gotten out.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi,
it's Arlene Senya from UNC. So thanks for an excellent investigation and summary. So I was curious, you mentioned that the titers in general were higher among patients with ocular syphilis. Did you stratify by stage? I know the numbers are small, but I'd be curious to see in the latent whether the titers were higher.
We did. So at every single stage, the titers were higher in ocular syphilis compared to non-ocular syphilis.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I mean, clearly we don't know whether the titers in the non-TREP antibodies really do correlate with disease burden or treponemal pallidum in the system. So I think that's clearly an interesting observation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.